This is a CBC podcast.
Well, hi there. I'm Gian Gomeshi, inviting you to enter the world of arts, cultural affairs, and entertainment with Q's video podcast. Feature interviews with the people and personalities shaping, captivating, and challenging culture. Delivered to your mobile device 3 times a week, visit cbc.ca/Q to subscribe to the Q video podcast and watch what we're doing.
Human-made pollution of coastal waters is a problem here, across Canada, and around the world. And a number of scientists are concerned about the federal government's decision to close down something called the Marine Pollution Unit. Boris Worm studies the oceans at Dalhousie University. Hello, welcome back.
Hi, Stephanie.
What does or did the Marine Pollution Unit do?
The Marine Pollution Unit, or Ecotoxicology Unit in jargon, it's a unit comprised out of 55 chemists, technicians, and research scientists nationally. So there's some on the West Coast, some of the East Coast, for example, here in St. Andrews in New Brunswick. And they're being phased out as part of the government's austerity drive, which hit the Department of Fisheries and Ocean, which this unit is part of, particularly hard. And these people study the pathways that pollution takes from land-based sources, you know, or atmospheric sources into the ocean, into marine animals, and then sometimes back into the food chain and back to us. And they're dealing with a number of pollutants. They focus largely on a class of pollutants called persistent pollutants, which means they don't break down in the environment, they actually accumulate. So the problem becomes larger over time. This is well-known toxins like dioxins or PCB or DDT or even heavy metals like mercury and cadmium and so on.
How did the work of those scientists benefit Canadians as they figured out how those chemicals were making their way into the food chain, I guess?
Well, I think of it as that they're having the pulse on the health of the ocean. They're providing early warning signs when that health is going down and when it may affect our health. So it's quite critical for animal health, but also human health. So just some of the health effects, mercury, for example, it accumulates in fish. It's a concern particularly for children and pregnant women. It's a neurotoxin, quite a potent one. And for example, tuna and billfish have quite a bit of mercury in them. And pregnant women in the U.S. are asked to refrain from eating those while they're pregnant. And other people should limit their intake. Then dioxins are potent cancer-causing agents. PCBs lead to reproductive failures. So there's a wide range of effects that are important to know about.
Won't some of those pollutants be curtailed once municipalities build new stormwater systems to keep rainwater from overflowing the sewage system?
Yeah, well, certainly there are. I mean, we're doing some things to bring pollution under control, definitely. The problem is that this is a moving target. So there's some pollutants that are becoming less prevalent in the environment as they're being phased out, PCBs, for example. And then others that are increasing. So just yesterday, for example, a group of scientists from the U.S. released a big study with multiple papers that showed how mercury, the neurotoxin, is released into air and deposited into oceans and then gets into the seafood and the human food chain. And what they showed is that the amount of mercury has more than doubled over the past decades. And this is due to some human activity, such as coal burning, mining, and other industrial processes. So from my perspective, it's really critical to keep on top of these new developments. There's new substances. We know about mercury. We know about DDT and these things. These are well-known pollutants. But then there's new substances that are released every day that we know less about and that are still accumulating in the environment all the same.
Okay. So what are the pollutants people need to be most concerned about in the future then?
So remember we talked about microplastics. It's a different story because these are particles, not dissolved compounds. But they're interesting because they're so abundant. These are small, broken down plastic parts. And just a study, again, last week released in the U.S. shows that in the Great Lakes, you have enormous concentrations of these microplastics that hadn't been known before. Mm. In fact, the concentrations there seem to be larger at their peak than peak concentrations, say, in the Pacific garbage patch that we also talked about, you know, this large soup of microplastics in the Central Pacific Oceans. And And these microplastics, they carry a bunch of chemicals we're concerned about called endocrine disruptors. So they mess with your hormone system. Bisphenol A, you've done stories
we've
on that.
We've talked lots about that, yeah.
That's right. So, what has been in water bottles, it's being phased out now because it's labeled as a toxic substance. But it's still in those microplastics and released in the environment. It mimics estrogen, the female sex hormone, and causes lots of changes in reproduction and so on. The other problem with microplastics is that they absorb PCBs, for example, and other pollutants and act as agents or carriers of those. So they're really looking at the pathways that these pollutants take through the environment, microplastics being one of the possible vectors, and how they can get back into the human food chain.
The government's line on some of its other cuts at Environment Canada, for instance, has been that the same work will still be done by other federal employees. Is there not a way to continue the study of pollutants without this particular marine unit?
Well, this is a very specialized field. Some of the people here had built labs over the last 10, 20 years, operating specialized equipment and focusing on particular substances that are really very hard to identify in the environment. One example is Dr. Peter Ross. He's on the West Coast, and he was a specialist for bioaccumulation of these toxins in marine mammals. And he showed, for example, in a recent study, that the amount of flame retardants in seals doubles every year. So it's a huge increase in these substances. They accumulate in seals and in other marine animals, and then eventually may get back into the human food chain. So what I'm saying is these are specialists which can't be easily replaced. And so I think we're losing critical capacity for understanding these problems and tracking them, and that's a concern.
What does it mean personally for the scientists involved?
Well, it's devastating. I mean, Peter Ross, for example, is in his late 40s. It would be very hard for him to find another job in the region. He would probably have to move abroad. And, you know, I do foresee, if this is ongoing, that some of our best scientists are being snapped away in countries where those skills are still valued. And, you know, sometimes this is done in a not very politically correct way, I find. I've heard about a recent incident at an institution, government institution here in Halifax, where affected employees were asked into a big auditorium, and then via video message they were laid off. And, you know, this is sounds to me like execution style. It would be horrible to be in that room with all the other people affected. And, you know, you don't even have a person talking to you about why it is that you're being laid off. So I think personally it's very hard for these people. But the bigger issue for society, I believe, is that we're losing critical capacity, and some of these problems will be more so under the radar in the future.
Boris Worm, thanks for speaking with us about this.
Thank you.
That's Boris Worm. He is our oceans guy. Next week on Surf and Turf, some turf talk with Andrew Hebda at the Nova Scotia Museum of Natural History.
Looking for more CBC podcasts? Go to cbc.ca/podcasting.